Utah's communities are a bit like our children. They will grow. Along the way, we have the opportunity to influence their growth in the hope that they'll be something we can be proud of years down the road. Decisions we make today will have consequences for generations. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. Our new research report, Building a Better Beehive, Land Use Decision-Making, Fiscal Sustainability, and Quality of Life in Utah, looks at both the short-term and long-term challenges of Utah's rapid population growth and its potential impact on our quality of life. As a follow-up, Utah Foundation sponsored a panel discussion with a group of experts who are working today to address the changes that growth will inevitably bring. In this edition of Utah Thrives, we'd like to bring you just a few of the thoughts from that conversation. Following a presentation from research analyst Sam Brucker on the Beehive Report, Utah Foundation President Peter Reichard moderated a panel discussion. It included opening remarks from each of the panelists, beginning with Andrew Gruber, the executive director of the Wasatch Front Regional Council, the state's largest regional planning agency.
As we all know, thanks to a strong economy and friendly communities and unparalleled outdoor opportunities, Utah is a great place to live and to play and to work. And that quality of life, as Sam noted, translates to growth. We're projecting, or the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute projects, another 2 million people in Utah by the year 2050, and the majority of them right here on the Wasatch Front. So think about the impacts of that growth on how we get around, our ability to afford housing, our water consumption, our air quality emissions, our economy, our overall quality of life, all impacted by this growth. And we have to ask ourselves, will our kids and our grandkids be able to live here? Will they want to live here? What we know is that we cannot take the great quality of life in Utah for granted. The good news is that in the face of growth, Utahns have always looked ahead, made a plan, and worked together to create the future that we want to have. This has been called by some the secret sauce of collaboration and caring for our community. And that's what continues to be needed now. Growth is coming, but I'm happy to say that we have a plan for that growth. WFRC has worked with its partners in the cities and counties and UDOT and UTA, Envision Utah, the private sector, communities all around the Wasatch Front to develop and adopt the Wasatch Choice 2050, which is a regional vision for growth and development over the next 30 years. Now, the Wasatch Choice vision is built on four key strategies, which are consistent with the strategies that Sam just laid out. Number one, provide transportation choices. We know that we cannot build our way out of congestion. Okay, we need continued roadway investment, and we have to maximize the effectiveness of the road system that we have through carpooling and HOV, connected and autonomous vehicles, and other strategies. But we also have to continue to enhance the existing transit network. More frequency, better speeds, more hours of service. And, as I'm sure Beth will talk about, we have to have targeted expansions of rail and bus rapid transit. Provide opportunities for biking. And the Wasatch Choice vision calls for a balanced investment in transportation choices. And, Peter, perhaps we can talk a little bit later about whether we have the revenues projected to have that balanced investment. Second, we have to support housing options. We respond to the market demands and allow for greater choices, particularly in multifamily housing in city or town centers. Now, it may surprise some of you to know that only 23% of Utah households are married families with children. But 75% of Utah's households are single-family detached homes. In the Wasatch Choice vision, what we contemplate is gradually, between now and 2050, that balance shifts so that it will be 60% single-family detached and 40% multifamily homes. Three, support and preserve open space. so we can continue to provide unparalleled access to the outdoors, which is key to our quality of life and our competitive advantage. And number four, and this is where the magic happens, we have to link our economic development with our transportation and our housing decisions. So we know Utah's growing rapidly, and there's limited undeveloped land on the Wasatch Front. So much of this growth can and should be absorbed in city and town centers through infill and mixed-use redevelopment that is coordinated with high-capacity transportation. So the areas close to existing or planned transit stations are really well-suited for employment growth and for absorbing the growing market demand for multifamily housing and townhomes, especially if the homes and the jobs, the transit stations and the parks and the shopping are tied together through well-connected local streets and sidewalks. And if we can do this, if we can create opportunities for centered, mixed-use development, will provide options for accommodating that growth, but at the same time, it will help us to preserve the character of existing traditional suburban and rural neighborhoods. So I'll just note that if we do this, if we implement this centered growth strategy in the Wasatch Choice vision, we'll improve our mobility and increase connections of homes and jobs, and this means increased access to job opportunities for residents, and to workers and customers for businesses, which translates to increased economic activity. We'll improve our air quality through a 59% reduction in mobile source emissions from cleaner vehicles, more transportation choices, and less driving. We'll reduce water use. We'll increase housing options and affordability. We'll save 27,000 acres of open space and farmland through different development patterns. For local governments, we'll promote fiscal sustainability because local governments will reduce their costs on infrastructure, such as roads and utilities, by nearly $6 billion, 22% savings from those different development patterns. And overall, we'll have a region where our kids and our grandkids will be able to live and will want to live. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we'll hear from Robert Groh, CEO of Envision Utah. Over the course of more than 20 years, Envision has convened Utahns around efforts to create and sustain communities that are beautiful, prosperous, healthy, and neighborly. Welcome, Robert, and thank you for Envision's ongoing collaborations with Utah Foundation.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you to UTA for bringing us together this morning and for this great intellectually stimulating piece of work that, again, is a great call to action for what we need to keep doing in Utah. I want to take you on a little walk down memory lane. Andrew has articulated so well and the others well about strategies about where we need to go. But as we look to the future, I'd like to celebrate for a couple minutes the firm foundation on which we build. If we had come up in this building 25 years ago, which is when the subcommittee of the Coalition for Utah's Future, which I chaired, was thinking about growth issues, and I had looked out that direction from these windows, there would have been no gateway. I-15's ramps came three more blocks into the city. It was an urban wasteland. Most of Main Street was empty, and the storefronts were boarded up. When we had the Olympics, in fact, we had nice, pretty pictures in a bunch of those storefronts because we didn't have businesses. As I looked to the south, you'd see Sandy City growing at 10% a year, just overwhelmed with applications for new subdivisions as we continued to build in a way that was could only be served by automobiles. As we looked this way, we saw the effort of Salt Lake City to grow into these neighborhoods with a few office towers, and then the city had said no. So look up here, the Capitol building was in need of repair. I mean, if I'd looked at 4 South, that vibrant corridor in our community today, you would have seen really decaying urban remnants along that, including a bread-making facility and other things. And now look out the windows today and think about the foundation on which we build. I-15 was rebuilt and was pulled back. The Capitol has been rebuilt. Symphony Hall was created. The Salt Palace was rebuilt. If you look down Main Street, you see billions of dollars of investment by different stakeholders in the community to build a great and strong community. We've built more housing in Salt Lake City in the last 10 years than we built in the last 100 years before that. And so we build on a firm foundation. And I just want to list for you a few of the people who helped do that a generation ago. These were people who came together at that point. Mike Leavitt, Spence Eccles, Larry Miller, Tom Dolan, Gary Herbert, who was then a commissioner in Utah County, M. Russell Ballard, Bishop George Niederauer, Bill Smart from the Deseret News, Roger Boyer, Kim Gardner, Aileen Clyde, David Gardner, who's head of the couple of the major foundations of California, brought money to the party. Harris Simmons, Pamela Atkinson, Kelly Matthews, Norma Matheson, Ardeth Kapp, a few others. Bob Huffner, who came in this morning, was involved. Where's Wilf Summercorn? Wilf Summercorn was there at the beginning of this effort to really turn Utah towards quality growth, towards smart growth. Karen Shepard, who was then one of our congresswomen, was there. Dee Dee Corradini, the mayor of Salt Lake City. Scott Howell, who I saw come in, was there from the beginning. We build on a firm foundation of great change, and one of the greatest changes has been what UTA has done. We built rail faster than anywhere else in America over the last 15 years as we came out of a vision from 1997 to 2000 where Utah said, we want that rail system, and they voted twice after seeing scenarios of 2020 without it and with it. And so this is a time to really celebrate where we are and to face this future with optimism. Utah in the 1800s had many decades where the population of Salt Lake City doubled, completely doubled in less than 10 years. This pathway of growth we're on will continue, is going to continue, is projected to continue, and so the call to continue to collaborate together to actually get on the maps, on the ground, and think through as stakeholders how we actually make this happen still remains our greatest challenge as we look at this future. And so the kind of intellectual effort that has gone into this and asking and taking the blood pressure of Utahns about the growth issues, I think, is very helpful to our future. So I'm looking forward to this discussion this morning, but we are really ought to be grateful to those who've laid this foundation so that we can continue to build on what has been accomplished so far. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Beth Holbrook is with Carleton, a member of the Triumvirate Board, which has been charged with setting the future course of UTA. UTA's transit projects are one of the driving forces of development in our state. Beth's career includes real estate, banking, and public service. She's also immediate past president of the Utah League of Cities and Towns. Let's welcome Beth Holbrook.
Good morning, everyone. One of the things that I really appreciated so much is Andrew really outlined a lot of the things that we have done and that we can do during the future. And I think Robert Groh actually really said it well when he said that we are all part of that foundation, that the people who have come before us have really created the stepping stones that we need in order to continue to address all of the growth issues that we know are going to occur. With UTA, one of the things that we are doing right now, and I'll talk about the history in just a little bit, is we are looking at our future front runner. I just wanted to get a quick poll. Who here has been on one of our systems, front runner tracks, buses? All right. I did not see a hand. Okay, I know I can't see everyone, but I did not see a hand that didn't go up. That is part of what we want to continue to encourage. We want people to ride our system, and we want them to be able to know that their residents can do that too. One of the things that we're going to talk about a little bit today is where is that nexus of transit opportunities, and how does that correlate with the housing component and with other areas that, that we feel that can really help to continue to develop UTA. So for those of you, UTA was started in 1970 as a bus service, and now we have the system that we have today. We did our tracks in 1999, and we finished with our front-runner system that we see today in 2015. All of that was driven and accomplished and funded because cities and communities throughout the state of Utah felt, and the Wasatch Front felt, that that was where we need to focus our growth on. As you all know, we only have a little bit of geography, relatively speaking. So how do we maximize what we have? And how do we continue to do the things that, that will be really relevant to future growth? We look at housing. We call it transit-oriented development, or TODs. Those are some of the things that we feel really can help to get address some of those housing issues. Housing is the biggest challenge that we are facing right now. Well, it's in the top. I think they're all kind of value added. We have to be able to have that affordability component, or at least allow communities to develop in a way that can incorporate that within their communities. When I was with the League, one of the things that we really emphasized was, how do we develop as a community, and how do we keep our identity and still address all of these needs? And at UTA, I feel like this is where we get to be part of that solution in a huge way. TODs allow us to do the density and the ability to have what we would call a walkable lifestyle, or at least a lifestyle that can maybe not have to have one car. Think about what that can do to the economics of a family if you now have the ability to take transit and in your daily life in some capacity, whether it's where you live, whether it's where you work. Our goals right now for the immediate future are to continue to develop the future of Front Runner and to see what that looks like. We know that our expansion is going to go all the way up to Box Elder and all the way down to Payson for our Front Runner system. But our commuter link is only one aspect of that. We also have our tracks lines here in Salt Lake County, and those have been incredibly successful. We are working to integrate the red line, the blue line, the green line, and getting to the areas that can maximize our transit. One of the other things that we did last year in August of 2018 is we opened up a BRT, or a Bus Rapid Transit. Bus Rapid Transit really changed the game in Utah County, and I saw Mayor Brunst here somewhere. There he is, Orem. That is a game changer for, I think, a community who wasn't sure how transit was going to work in their area. That system allows students and residents to get on and off in a high-frequency time frame. In other words, every 6 minutes on the peak hours, a bus will come. That means you're not checking your timetables, and that's taking people where they need to go within their community. That BRT, just for information, runs from the Orem Front Runner Station to the Provo Front Runner Station and back, and all along through those two cities, Provo and Orem. We at UTA want to make sure that we are meeting the needs of our communities. And our communities are different, and we recognize that. And that's why their input is so critical. And we want and encourage them to continue to give us that input. We are a very strong partner with WFRC, as well as the League, and a lot of these other entities, Utah Foundation and Envision Utah, because we're all looking at growth, and we can all take it to the next level. This is where I really feel that we can continue to support other areas as well. We look at TOD as a housing component, but it also spurs economic development. If you were to look at 4 South, I'm going to borrow Robert's example. If you were to look at 4 South in 2001, I think is the time frame he alluded to, there was a bread factory and some other things along 4 South. When you look at it today, the amount of private investment that has gone along that 4 South corridor, mostly housing, but other things as well. There's economic development areas. There's a lot of things that can really benefit our communities down the road. I'd like to encourage everyone here today to take another look at our Front Runner, take a tour of our UVX, our BRT system, and really see what you can do to integrate transit in some capacity within your life. This is a skill change or a mindset change that I think once we all start to do this and incorporate this and encourage our other residents to do so, that's going to help to continue our growth during the future. We want to look at TOD as an improvement access to opportunities, a value capture from our public investment and our private investment, and the reason that we have the system that we have today. There was an article a couple weeks ago that talked about the fact that we have actually decreased our congestion slightly. And we at UTA know that we are helping to do that, but we can't do it without the continued support and the growth and the planning opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Next, we'll hear from Bryson Garbett. Bryson started Garbett Homes more than 30 years ago. Garbett Homes has now built over 5,000 homes and apartments in more than 30 communities and is currently selling homes throughout the Wasatch Front. And, of course, Bryson is a longtime friend and recent chair of Utah Foundation. Bryson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. This past winter, on a particularly hard and bad air day, my granddaughter, who is 6 years old, was experiencing trouble breathing, and her mom took her to the doctor's office, and they said her problem was pollution, and they hoped that the damage to her lungs that they detected was not permanent. It was really troubling and sad to see that little sweet innocent girl with a breathing device on, struggling to breathe. And so we've talked about quality of life, and what kind of quality of life do we have in store for the future generation, and how important is our quality in maintaining our quality of life, and how do we build so that we don't make it worse for the future generation, that we can make it better? And there are many things that we need to do and can do. But both the Utah Foundation and Envision Utah have identified the polluters. Cars are the worst, of course. But you might be surprised to know that homes and buildings are the second biggest, not industry. And each year, as we've talked about here, there are many things that are being built, and thousands of homes are built here. And we have a great opportunity to make a difference in how we do them. But it's not happening. Homes are built now, and home builders are required to build to a 2012 standard. So when you go buy a new home, you're getting a model that's really a 2012 model. And there's a handful of sites, though, in Utah that you can go to, and where homes are being built to a 2021 model and are very efficient. And there's one thing, if I could just share with you, that could be done that will make a huge difference for all of us. For example, the U.S. Department of Energy has a program called Net Zero Energy Ready Homes. And each home that's built to that standard is actually inspected by an independent inspector to make sure that it actually is a home that performs that way. And it's not just somebody saying that we're green and doing that. And each home that is built that way is twice as energy efficient as a code-built home in Utah. So in the past years in Utah, in the last 4 years, I would say about 250 homes in Utah have been built this way, out of all the thousands that have happened. But with just imagine what could happen if all the homes were here, if we had the leadership to have that happen. And it's not an expensive thing to do in a home. It's very easy thing to do. I love seeing the progress that we've talked about, what's happened in the past 25 years in Utah, seeing the cranes and the construction. You know, I've been doing this for 47 years. I love seeing that. But it's a critical time that we take advantage, that we the new things that we build, that we can do it in the correct way. Thank you.
Thank you, Bryce. And our final speaker this morning is Cameron Deal. Cameron became executive director of the Utah League of Cities and Towns in the fall of 2017. For more than a century, the League has assisted jurisdictions across our state and served as their voice. And I should mention that the survey work we conducted with the League last fall helped to inform our new report. Thank you for joining us, Cameron.
As Peter referenced, I represent at the League of Cities and Towns as the director 248 cities and towns around the state. So what does that mean when we talk about planning for growth? Well, let me give you an example of yesterday up at the Capitol during Legislative Interim Day. We had elected officials from Park City, Moab, and St. George present to the legislature about how their communities are tackling the challenges that they're facing around growth, both from a population perspective and an economic development perspective, particularly in the realm of tourism. Tell me if this sounds familiar to the conversation we're having today about the Wasatch Front. The conversation revolved around housing, the conversation revolved around transportation, and the conversation revolved around how do we maintain the quality of life for our current residents while planning for the future demands on our communities. So even though today's conversation is really focused on the Wasatch Front, our organization, speaking for all 248 cities and towns, recognizes that that conversation is happening in every corner of this state. What you'll see in the report is that you'll see that cities over the last decade have started to step up to the challenge. You'll see a tremendous amount of change within how cities are planning for growth. But you'll also see the unique ways in how cities are planning for growth. You'll see how Clearfield is doing it compared to how Orem is doing it. You'll see how West Valley is doing it compared to how Provo is doing it, or Sandy versus North Ogden. And that's one of the really valuable gems of this report, is that it recognizes that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to how we plan for growth. Indeed, one-size-misfits-all because of all those unique characteristics that are within cities. Some cities have access to FrontRunner. Some cities don't. Some cities, like where we are here in downtown Salt Lake City, have access to a variety of transportation options, whether that's freeway off-ramps, light rail, front runner, you name it. So the land use patterns and the planning is going to be different here than it is in another portion of the Wasatch Front, which at this point may not have any access to high-capacity transportation, but is planned to have that access in years to come. So, again, this question of balance between the needs of today and the needs of tomorrow is really front and center with every one of the 1,380 mayors and council members that are serving right now across the state. So what really is the role of the city, then, in this equation? The key role of the city is to plan. Cities provide infrastructure. Cities provide services. Cities are where really the rubber meets the road to provide the services and infrastructure that we all rely on when it comes to our quality of life. Nobody wants to live in a house that doesn't connect to the sewer. You don't want to flush your toilet and have nothing happen. You want to call 911 and know that you're going to get a response. You want to have a sidewalk that you know is safe that can help connect you from point A to point B and a variety of other transportation options. All of that land use planning and land use responsibility fits within the city general plan. And state law requires that every city in the state must have a general plan that considers land use, that considers housing, that considers transportation. And then in addition to those three big ticket items, also looks at open space, also looks at water. And those decisions and those results are going to look different depending on your community. If you're an old growth established community that's currently redeveloping, it's going to look different than if you're a fast growth suburb that is just trying to keep up with the pace of growth right now. And so that's, if there's one key takeaway from this report, it's that every city is unique, every community is unique, and we need to make sure that policymakers at the local, county, and state level recognize the uniqueness of that community character while also providing the tools to plan for the future. One of the mantras we have within the organization is that local government leaders need to think regionally as they act locally. And that's why you see this tremendous collaboration between local government leaders, transit providers, the private sector, metropolitan planning organizations, and others. So as this conversation continues, we must recognize the key role that cities play, as well as the collaboration that we can all play as we balance the needs of today's residents, which includes all of us, with the needs of tomorrow's residents.
Utah Foundation's panel discussion about the impacts of community growth in Utah was held on June 20th, 2019, at Zions Bank's Founders Room. The moderator was Utah Foundation President Peter Reichard. The presentation was edited in this podcast for time and clarity. Our thanks to Utah Transit Authority for sponsoring the event. The research report, Building a Better Beehive, Land Use Decision-Making, Fiscal Sustainability, and Quality of Life in Utah, is available on our website at utahfoundation.org. That report was supported by Union Pacific, the Wasatch Front Regional Council, and the Utah League of Cities and Towns. Utah Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research group funded by business, philanthropic foundations, higher education, local government, and individual donations. Founded in 1945, our mission is to produce objective, thorough, and well-reasoned research and analysis that promotes the effective use of public resources, a thriving economy, a well-prepared workforce, and a high quality of life for Utahns. Utah Foundation seeks to help decision makers and citizens understand and address complex issues. Utah Foundation also offers constructive guidance to improve governmental policies, programs, and structures. I'm Dan Bomas. Thanks for listening.